From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in the trash, at a home being prepared for a household sale. The owner found two boxes of radio tubes in the garbage, worthless essentially, but it was what was inside those radio tubes that was so interesting. Hiding inside were two Girl Scout cookie boxes from the early 1900s. Thanks to an appraisal from Jack Wanderman Associates, the owner was able to turn those boxes into about $100. That's just one of the thousands of stories of such discoveries, sometimes in the garbage, sometimes in an attic, sometimes in an estate sale, antiques, family heirlooms, knickknacks from bygone eras. What's it worth? How do you know what it is? Well, we've got a good way to find out this hour. First of all, I want to tell you about what's happening next Saturday. Next Saturday, May 7th, WXXI is hosting the annual Antiques Appraisal Fair. You're going to need a ticket to have an item appraised, but first, here on Connections, we're doing it for you for free. It's the return of the College of Collectible Knowledge, always such a popular hour, and your chance right now to call in and get some help understanding anything that you have that you might have discovered that you want to know the value of. We'll do our best, and we got such a great group. Yvonne Jordan's here. She is the owner since Thanksgiving of the brand new Shop 15 near the Highland Diner. Antiques and vintage there. Yvonne, nice to have you back.
Thank you. Always a pleasure.
And Jack Wanderman and Nick Wanderman are here from Jack Wanderman and Associates. Jack, always a great pleasure. Great to see you.
As always, Evan, and you've been doing a wonderful job here at the station.
Flattery will get you everywhere, sir.
I know. That's what that's my line.
Yes. Nick, nice to see you as well.
Thank you so much.
What is keeping, I was going to say, what's keeping you busy? I know, Yvonne, what's keeping
shop,
you busy?
Absolutely.
Tell me about Shop 15.
Well, we opened just before Black Friday. We had to get in on the holiday thing, and we're accepting consignments like I did before 10 years ago when I had my other shop there on East Avenue. And it's just fun. I'm having fun. It's very nice. So everybody's welcome. Stop on down.
Well, and when people see Yvonne, they say, aren't you doing the radio thing? Because this has been a fixture on WXXI for years.
Exactly.
So we always make sure at least once a year to bring them back here. And if this is a new idea for you, listeners, if you know the College of Collectible Knowledge, they need no introduction. If you don't, let me just say, this has been a fixture on this program for many years. And it's your chance to call the program. If you have something at home, do your best to describe it. Some people have emailed me in the past. I try to share a picture. But it's 844-295-TALK. 844-295-8255, or if you're in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. But wherever you are, if you're listening on WEOS across the Finger Lakes, across Western New York, 844-295-8255, and our panel will help you work through understanding what you might have at home. Again, an antique, something that you're not sure what exactly the provenance is, where did it come from, what might it be worth. I am always amazed at their level of knowledge and how they have learned what they have learned. I mean, Yvonne, have you ever said, I've never seen that, I have no idea?
Yes, I have.
Come on.
Maybe once.
No. Maybe once over the year. It's amazing.
So, thank you. But I understand we're reaching a larger audience now, too, than we used to reach.
Well,
that's new and different.
Yeah, we're
us.
All the way down to Ithaca and sort of far and wide here. And I see the phone ringing already. So we'll get to that in a second. Jack, Nick, have you guys ever had to say that is something brand new? When's the last time you saw something so brand new that you had no clue what you were looking
this
at?
This morning.
Get
this morning.
It's part art. It's also part science. You can only take analytics so far in an aesthetical field that always has some new evidence of what constitutes antiques and value in decorative arts. You never know. You're always finding new things.
And Jack, I mean, I guess it's very important to say I don't know when you don't know, right?
Yeah.
It actually is.
As rare as it is.
I'm not sure. Yeah. Let me do some follow-up research on this. But there are things that you can't compare to other things in past lot auction archives. So a little research is always necessary.
Grilled cheese sandwiches that look like Elvis.
That's it happens in jewelry, actually, quite a bit. You see things that you just didn't even know existed, so that's fun.
All right, Mike in Rochester, we already lost one phone call. Mike, call back here. I don't know if it was our wonky end or yours, but Mike, give us a call back here. And when we come to you this hour, do your best to be as descriptive as you can, because as much as I have gone on and pontificated about how good our panel is, it really helps if you can be as descriptive as you can be. So I'll start with Michael in Irondequoit. Go ahead, Michael.
Yes, hello.
Go ahead.
Hello. I have a painting. It's probably a 4x4, really nicely framed, and it's an oil on canvas. It's, if you look at it, most people would think Jackson Pollock, that style. Very interesting piece. Down in the right-hand corner, it's signed by actually what appears to be his wife's signature, Lee Krasner. It's L. Krasner, 61/61. And we have no idea. It was actually a garbage collection that I got.
A lot of a lot of post-war contemporary ends up in that state, and then the issue with post-war contemporary specifically is proving provenance. Most clients can have a Monet. Most of the 20th century impressionist and modern post-war contemporary art is locked in some type of legal cage, and it's all an issue of getting the estate to prove it. We had a client that had a piece of pottery by Jackson Pollock. The provenance on it was solid enough, but when you started talking with all of the institutions that would validate such a piece, it became almost impossible. So unless you either have proof that you knew the artist, and it's not necessarily that her works are on the same level as Pollock, but you're starting to, you know, you start talking about Jackson Pollock, so now you're starting to talk about that whole market. You know, trying to get somebody to authenticate it and prove that it is hers and it's from that circle costs thousands and thousands of dollars. The Wildenstein Institute basically controls a great deal of the early post-impressionist and works like that. It's the same thing. So you could have a Rothko, and it's signed by Rothko. Unless you have a picture of Rothko holding it and you standing next to him with a newspaper in your hand, it's probably not any type of value that you'll ever be able to recognize. I don't know if you, either Jack or Yvonne have an opinion on that as well, but that's usually the findings. So.
Yeah, usually when there's art that's in discrepancy, there are institutions for more well-known artists that will authenticate the work of art by signature, by style, and so
on.
For
a price, though. It's always for a price.
Yeah.
And even then, you can submit and pay a price and not get any.
Yeah,
they not get the results you want
to
get.
They tend to go through the catalog raisonné for most works now, especially 20th century, and the estates control those catalogs. And to add a new entry to those catalogs is an extremely long and expensive political process. You could end up spending more than the value of the painting just on getting it approved. So that goes for Renoir, Monet, all these big name artists. The problem
you
is,
can start at that place.
Absolutely.
I mean, there's always a chance that what you have is already in there.
Right. Never know.
You never know.
Never know.
So.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you. That's what I expected from doing a little checking in the past. That's what I expected.
Is it a nice piece? Do you like it?
Oh, it's great.
Yeah.
It's great. And my kids, when we first brought it in, they said, oh, this is great. This is the only modern thing we have in our house.
You know, the thing to do is there's probably somebody that you can locate that would have more knowledge on the specific catalog of works, and they could probably say, it doesn't look like anything like hers, and the signature's wrong. You know, you start going through that type of process.
Yeah.
As Yvonne
is. And it doesn't. It doesn't look like her work.
Right.
She didn't really do really a lot of her husband's type work. I'm sure you're familiar. So,
mm-hmm.
but,
yeah.
So it doesn't. But anyway, it's an interesting piece, and it's great hanging on the wall.
Yeah, wonderful.
Thanks.
Great, thank you.
Thank you, Michael, for the phone call. It's 844-295-TALK to talk to our College of Collectible Knowledge. If you've got questions about, well, anything that you want to ask about and bounce off them about possible value and trying to get an over-the-phone appraisal, it's 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI in Rochester, 263-9994. Nick, you mentioned provenance in this kind of a case.
Yeah.
One of the challenges. What's the process of determining provenance?
It's more atypical political, and it's always an evolving issue with even regards to what they call antiquities or early warring period Chinese bronzes or post-war contemporary works by the most prolific 20th century artists. It's just an always evolving field. It's become a legal issue, estates, what copyright, proof. There's no one specific answer. There's millions of dollars spent every year on the legal answers to those questions. So you could go through the process of determining age on something, and then they, you know, those tests proven conclusive. You never know.
Yeah, there's a lot of different steps to it. You know, if you can get for instance, if you buy a piece that's being deaccessioned by a museum someplace, you know, then you have one little piece of it. They thought it was a specific thing. They sold it to you as that specific thing. And eventually, there are many, many steps to the market before it gets to a high range. A lot of people have to approve it. And then you have to get an auction house to put their name on it or something like that.
Then you got to get a buyer to agree.
Or you have to find a private buyer that's willing to take the leap and say, yes, I think that original museum was right. It's messy. It's very messy.
Well, callers, we've got most of the lines already filled.
So we better get moving.
We're going to try to get moving here. Be patient. We'll come to you. I want to remind our listeners, by the way, that if you get through this hour, that's great. If you don't, or if you've got more that you want to show and bring, we encourage you to get tickets now. Next Saturday, May 7th, that's 8 days from now, from 10 to 3, here at WXXI, right here at 280 State Street. You can get a ticket, WXXI.org/events, or call 258-0200 for a ticket. It's $30, and one person, one item. I don't know if
it's two items.
They let you sneak
in two.
Might
be two, yeah.
Oh, the Wondermans, I guess we're sneaking in two now.
That's
right. Very scandalous, but...
Yeah, and Evan, yes. I might mention that sometimes some of the best things that show up are things that people didn't even think to bring in, but at the last minute grab something that has been in the house there that never really caught their curiosity that much.
Sure.
So if you suspect that something might be good, it's worth the money to have it checked out.
Very good.
There are instances where tens of thousands of dollars have been found in things that people had no clue
in
was
the silverware drawer.
All right,
yeah.
All right, listeners. So, but don't you show up next Saturday. Get tickets in advance. WXXI.org/events. All right. Next up, Tim in Webster with the College of Collectible Knowledge. Go ahead, Tim.
Hi, how are you?
Good,
Tim.
I have an interesting find. I live in an old 1870s Victorian home in Webster, and we pulled apart the walls to do some insulation. And in one section of the house, we found an old baseball. The addition was put on in 1901, and we found a baseball. I'm just wondering what kind of, if there was any value to that type of thing. It's an old pigskin baseball. It's in fairly good shape, and I would imagine if you hit it with a bat a few times, it might start to fall apart. But it's interesting because it also has the last stitch on it seems to be a piece of wire. So I'm wondering if it's really a baseball that's that old.
Yeah, it's not signed.
It is not. It has no labeling on it whatsoever.
Okay. Generally, a baseball that's just a baseball that's old, it's not worth a tremendous amount of money. You know, some of them sell in the neighborhood of $20, $25.
If it looks, that's about the going range, but if it looks like it was actually a homemade baseball, there are people that do collect them, and they might bring up as much as $40, but those are few and far between.
Yeah.
But the wire made me think of that, so.
Sometimes it's a home repair, and 50 cents on a nice garage sale Sunday.
It's just kind of neat that it was found in a 1901 edition. Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
There was somebody that I know that was doing remodeling, and they took down a wall, and the workers that had built the home threw beer cans in the wall, and these beer cans were some of the first beer cans developed by Genesee Brewery. And one of them sold for $6,000, the other one for $4,000. So it's...
You got to be kidding me, because I have a couple of those, too.
Oh, no, they are. Go on.
They came out of the same wall?
These beer cans were found in the wall of an addition that was done in 1967, though. And I found a TV guide that was from 1967. It was kind of interesting, because there was an advertisement from the House of Guitars for a guitar and amplifier together for $20.
Oh, my gosh.
That's great. That's great.
Well,
you know, I do have one more question for you, though. What about a German war helmet that from World War One?
World War One.
I have the helmet that's intact. It's in great condition, and it even has the flag of the German soldier that wore it. you know, the flags that the mothers would stitch for them of the section of Germany that they were from?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's definitely World War One, not World War Two.
Definitely World War One, because I have a couple friends that are very knowledgeable on that stuff, and they say it's World War One. And
came back
with a great uncle in American soldier that brought it back from Germany.
Yeah, probably it's in the range of $200 to $250. War souvenirs are a very, very sought-after commodity in today's marketplace. Second World War, First World War, clothing, swords, bayonets during the occupation in Japan. Thousands of samurai swords came into the United States as souvenirs, and a lot of the times those blades were from families, and some of those are worth a lot of money.
Maybe $325, $350 on the high side. I mean, it's hard to give a range on something like
condition.
Yeah. Or how badly somebody sees it and wants it. You know, it's...
Well, at that number, I would think more of maybe visiting Europe someday and trying to find the family of the person that wore it and give it to them.
Wow.
That'd interesting.
Be, that'd be a tough job,
that'd
I think.
That'd be an expensive proposition.
Well, but interesting.
Tim, thanks for the phone call. Clearing up more space as we keep going down the line. Next up is Paul in Rochester. Hi, Paul. Go ahead.
How are you? Yeah, my mother bought a house around 60 years ago and from a... It was a Chinese lady that had it down in Shalott, and when she bought the house, the lady gave her a Chinese watercolor that we still have. I was wondering where I could get it checked out to see what it was worth.
Send us an image.
Pardon?
Send us an image of it, if possible, and we can have a look at it, or you can send an email to us or Evan. It's up to you.
All right.
info@jackwanderman.com or Evan.
So it's info@jackwanderman.com.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good way to do it right now. Okay.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks very much, Paul. Next up, I've got Jeremy in Rochester. Go ahead, Jeremy.
Good afternoon, folks. Great show, by the way.
Thanks.
Thank you.
I have a couple of toy artifacts that came through from my mother. She was born in 1920. Her dad was German, her mother was Norwegian, and she had this beautiful handmade wooden Noah's Ark, complete with hand-carved animals of all sorts. This thing is about 2 feet in length by maybe 10 inches thick by maybe 16 inches high, and one side of it is hinged and opens up so that the animals can be put in and taken out.
It's a good piece.
It's all hand-painted, and I realize it's probably hard to make an evaluation without actually seeing it, but handmade old toys, is there a market out there for this stuff?
Yes, it's considered not only toys but American folk art, especially the animals and the carvings.
I've actually had one before.
Yeah.
And where did you say she was from, Sweden?
Well, it could have either come from a German relative or a Norwegian relative. It's hard to say. I, for some reason, am thinking it's German.
There are a couple of versions that came from the Schoenhut factory that may or may not be signed because they did have them hand-carved. So really, we just...
The one that I had it was in a little rough condition. It had the animals. It was... I don't think it was made by one of the toy companies like Schoenhut, but it brought about $650.
Yeah, it depends on how many animals and if you actually have pairs and, you know,
general overall
condition. Is it on wheels? Is this one of the ones that's on wheels?
No, it's
wheels.
Not.
Okay.
It's literally a boat.
Yeah.
Not on wheels. It wasn't like a pull toy or anything.
Okay.
And I'm sure that, you know, it was played with. It's not in pristine shape, but...
The number of people back in the early 20th century that were amateur and professional woodworkers would take great pride in crafting things for their children, and Noah's Ark was a favorite theme because it not only was a boat and an ark for animals, but you got all the animals with it, and a young mind could go many places with that kind of toy.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very desirable. It is, as Nick said, it's folk art in addition to being a toy.
One other item, just quickly, and I'll get off the air. I have a lantern. It's about 12 inches tall. The very top is marked DLETZ.
Railroad lantern.
The rim, it's got the letters DL ampersand WRR, so I'm guessing it's a railroad lantern.
Yes.
It has a clear globe with the same letters that appear to be etched into the glass.
I hope my son's not listening, but I think that's Delaware and Lackawanna, but I'm not positive.
Okay. Oh, yeah, probably Delaware, Lackawanna, Western. Anyway, it seems to be fully intact. It's straight, not bent or anything. Is there an approximate market value on something like that?
What color is the glass?
It's a red globe.
Yeah,
it's a red globe.
Not a casting.
Yeah.
Okay.
And is there a finish on the metal? It's like a silver?
Yeah, it's got a, like, it almost looks like a zinc-coated, painted finish. It's not rusted.
Yeah, they bring anywhere from $35 to $75.
Yeah, okay, great. Thank you.
It's railroad collectibles are very popular with people.
Yep.
Thank you, Jeremy. You are hearing from Jack Wanderman, Jack Wanderman and Associates. Jack and Nick Wanderman are here, and Yvonne Jordan, the owner of Shop 15 Antiques and Vintage, right near the Highland Diner. And they are our College of Collectible Knowledge. They're back here, and you can see them in person next Saturday, May 7th, 10 to 3 at WXXI in our studios for the fourth annual WXXI Antiques Appraisal Fair. Tickets are $30 per person, and you can get them right now, WXXI.org/events. Tom in Canandaigua is next. Go ahead, Tom.
Hi. My wife has been a collector of mid-century modern furniture for a while. We have some Adrian Pearsall, some Haywood Wakefield, Herman Miller, Michael Boffman, Lane. And I'm wondering, are you folks the right people to talk to in terms of getting them appraised, or is there someone else you might recommend?
No, you're talking to the right people in this area.
Absolutely.
Go ahead.
Okay. All right. That's what I needed to know. So we'll make sure that we get some images to you, and hopefully see you next weekend. Thank you very much.
Wonderful. Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom. That's a nice little billboard for that. So it's next Saturday.
And the market for that is really shifting from
mid-century modern?
Into that, yes.
Yeah.
There's a lot more people interested in it.
It's interesting.
Than even 10 years ago.
Interesting.
When we do house calls, the owners say, you know, my kids don't want this stuff, furniture from the 1920s, 40s, Victorian. And the shift in the large metropolitan cities is to mid-century modern, and it spills over to other towns as well. But that's been a very, very strong trend in decorating contemporary homes. So it's something that is worth learning more about if you are interested in it.
All right, back to the phone. Tony in Rochester. Go ahead, Tony.
Hello, folks. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a letter from Senator Bobby Kennedy. It was sent to my mother in response to a letter from her in regard to my brother being drafted and going to Vietnam. And without getting into the details, she was requesting that he be generous with my brother and not send him to the front line. The letter is framed now. I had it framed and gave it to my brother. And it does have Bobby's signature on it. It's not a fax. It's an actual signature. And quirkily, he spelled my mother's name wrong. But I would never sell the thing, but I was just curious if it has any value at all.
Yes, it does. And the thousands of dollars probably, how many thousands, it really depends. It just depends on what you're looking to, how you're looking to evaluate it.
It sounds like the content is definitely
it could be as low as $1,300, $1,500, all the way up to $10,000 or more.
I'm seeing some letters online from one of the subscription sites for $210. Here's another one, $114. So it's all over the board. I mean, it depends on the subject matter, as Nick says, and one relating to the war would probably be on a higher spectrum.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, okay.
Thank you, Tony. Here is an email from a listener named VM. She says, she says, I'm a regular listener. Great program. I was recently in Tennessee and came across an interesting salt and pepper shaker set. The base was Abraham Lincoln, and the actual salt and pepper shakers were two pickaninny caricatures of children. I'd like to know what these shakers may have been made, when these shakers may have been made, and what their value might be today. They were in a museum. No information was provided about their origin or value. I realize they are offensive in today's culture. Thanks from VM. It sounds to me almost like if you remember the debate about the carousel image up in Shalott.
Yeah. Yeah,
it sounds like those kind of images on salt shakers.
They're, you know, it can be offensive. A lot of people are offended, but there is also a large community that collect that type of Black Americana. Mm. It's quite a hot collectible. And surprisingly, a lot of it is being collected by African Americans.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a personal taste thing. It's definitely part of our history that is questionable. Oh,
here's there you go. Picture. There's a picture that was sent.
Oh, wow.
Hold it can you describe it as best you can?
It is a bust of Abraham Lincoln, ceramic bust, probably 8 inches tall.
You're talking about probably $150.
At least. Yes. Either side of it, there's a little boy and a little girl who are not actually too badly caricatured.
No, they're nice.
They're fairly nice. Fairly nice.
They make me a little uncomfortable. Okay, but anyway.
Gotta watch your salt now.
When do we think this would have been from?
The early 20th century.
Yeah, judging from that, I'll bet it's 40s or 50s.
Yeah.
From the type of manufacturing that's going on there. And they were manufactured. That's not a homemade thing at all.
I'm sorry, and it was not VM. VW. Thank you.
The funny thing is they might be from Japan.
Yeah, they might,
might be
from
Japan.
Yeah. A lot of it came from
Japan. A lot of markets were saturated with goods that foreign countries deemed desirable to America.
Yeah.
So it's not surprising.
Interesting. All right, VW, thank you for that email. Let's get our only break of the hour in, and we'll see if we can set a record for phone calls. The phones have been coming fast and furious for the College of Collectible Knowledge. If you're waiting, we'll get to you. We got a couple lines open right now. 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Yvonne, Jack, and Nick, ready to help you out after this short break on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Monday on The Next Connections. For more than 30 years, police have been working to solve the murder of an unidentified teenager in Livingston County. And on Monday, in our first hour, we have the debut of the brand new podcast, a collaboration between our Veronica Volk and Gary Craig from the Democrat and Chronicle. You want to join us for that. Then in our second hour, it's our monthly science roundtable, talking about the technology behind electric vehicles and self-driving cars. Talk to you Monday. Incredible to me. We were just talking about the backstories here, and here we are back on the air. I wasn't even paying attention. This is what happens when the College of Collectible Knowledge comes in. I lose all track of time, and the phones go crazy, as they are now. So if you want to call the program, you can do that. And I just want to remind you, if you can't get through this hour, get a ticket for $30. You can come down to WXXI Studios next Saturday, May 7th. It's the fourth annual WXXI Antiques Appraisal Fair. So back to the phones we go. Keith in Farmington. Go ahead, Keith.
Yes, I have a friend who has this. Stands about maybe 4.5 feet tall. It's about maybe 36 inches wide.
Hold on, Keith, get closer to the phone. You're kind of in and out. Start over. Go ahead.
All right. I have a friend who has this. It's a hexagon-shaped container that's attached. It's like a hexagon drum with one side of it has a door. And you can spin it. And we're either thinking it's one of three things. It's either an old wooden type washing machine, two, which would make the size appropriate to a washing machine. Two, it could be a rather large size butter churn. Or three, kindling. So I just need some help in trying to figure out what it is.
Does the barrel go horizontally or vertically?
Well, it's mounted horizontally, and it spins, so whatever's in it hits the sides as it spins. So, for example, if you put a tennis ball in there, it would hit each six side, rather than if you had it mounted the other way, it would hit the top and the bottom.
Right, right, okay. Very possibly it's a washing device.
Yeah, an early you know, washing device.
Or a churn. It could be a churn.
Yeah.
It seems often large for a churn. I mean, you have to put a heck of a lot of steam in there to get butter on it.
Well, you know, there are wood.
Does it look like it's would be waterproof when you shut the door? Will it hold liquid?
I believe it would. Again, it's rather old.
Is it like a barrel? Is part of it?
Yeah,
like
it looks like a barrel.
Okay. What you've got is a wood handheld wringer and washing machine. And they're selling in the range of $300 to $400.
All right.
It's barrel-shaped with metal bands around it.
Does it have metal bands around it?
Yeah, I believe there are some metal bands.
Okay.
Oh, there you go.
That's what it is.
Okay.
And, that's what it is.
All right. I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Keith. Thanks for the phone call. Let's see here. We have lots of mics. Mike in Irondequoit. Go ahead, Mike.
Hi. Love this show. Always do.
Mike, flattery will get you everywhere.
there's Jack's line.
Have a piece of scientific equipment. It's an old, not that there are new ones, old twin pan analytical balance. It's research grade. I got it when I graduated from college, and they were shifting over to electronic balances. And I got the research grade weights to go with it. And this is the glass case that has the door that slides up and down. And it has the little rider that you get the final two digits of the weight that goes across the top of the beam.
Yeah, they're pretty common. We see these from time to time. I mean, the value, depending on what it is, can value anywhere between $50 and as high as $500. Some of the much earlier ones are a little bit more valuable than the later ones. It's kind of the way with scientific equipment. The earlier they are, usually the better, and the later the worse. The market is very...
This is marked around 1905.
Yeah. Usually like 1880s. Yeah, in the 1880s, 1890s, they're usually a little bit. Yours probably falls somewhere in the middle.
Okay.
We did a sale on Allen's Creek Road. We had thousands and thousands of tools from the 18th to the 20th century, and we had a number of those, and they all sold.
Yeah, they're popular.
Yep.
It's a strange market, scientific things, because the collector base is very small. There was an auction in Boston of only scientific equipment, and some of the things were selling for $25, and some of the things were selling for $25,000. It's just all over the place.
Ooh,
with that market.
I'll take the $25,000.
So will everybody else.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'll split it with you.
Okay. I thank you much. Keep up the great shows.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Mike. That's very, very kind of you. A different Mike, no relation, in the city of Rochester. Go ahead, Mike.
Hey, how's it going?
Very good.
How are you doing?
Good.
I have an old chariot clock. It's all gold. It's got angels that are driving the horses, sitting on a chariot. And it's made from United. Sound familiar?
United is the manufacturer.
United Metal Goods in Brooklyn, New York. So it's a chariot, basically, with angels, and four horses are pulling the chariot.
It's a clock.
Yes.
Okay. Is there a maker on the clock?
It just says United in the center of the dial, and then in the back there's still a sticker on there that says Made in USA, Brooklyn, New York.
Yeah, it was a very popular theme towards the end of the 19th and early 20th century. Sometimes you'll see a cherub floating in the sky and a chariot or a cherub.
But, is it working?
Yes. It's on a mahogany base. The old thing's maybe about 2 feet long. It has a plug on it, and it does work.
Oh, so it's electric.
Yes.
Okay. All right. So, actually, if I had something like that in the shop, I'd probably put about $275 on it.
Yeah. That's what they go for.
And be willing to take offers.
They're a pretty popular item back in the day.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep. And they're dramatic now, but you have to have a big mantle or someplace to put them. So
they're quite common.
Yep.
But they always sell.
Yeah.
People like cherubs.
Yeah, they do.
And it's a nice little vanity item for a woman or even a man.
So that's
it. And it also came with the clock. Is from Taylor Instruments. It's a temperature, humidity. It's all mahogany. And there's a dial on it that says stormy, unsettled.
It hangs on the wall.
And the other dial next to its temperature and humidity.
It's a wall model?
Yeah, it's a,
It hangs on the wall.
No, there's really no way to mount it on the wall. You put it on a desk, I imagine. Okay. It's probably about 12 inches long.
Desktop.
Two big center dials.
All right.
Maybe 6 inches high.
Well, those turn up quite often in Rochester since it's a homegrown product.
Yep.
If it's working, again, that's quite important.
200.
Yeah, 200 tops, I think, if you find the right person.
Yeah. If it's French, then...
It's Taylor Instruments.
Yeah,
so.
No, it's that's accurate.
Yeah.
Okay, well, good luck, Mike. Hope that helps. We've opened up two more lines, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI. If you're in Rochester, 263-9994, to chat with the College of Collectible Knowledge. Fred in Rochester has been waiting. Go ahead, Fred. Hi, Fred, are you there? We don't. I'll tell you what, Fred, it might be my error, but call back. And let me go ahead and I think I just dumped two lines. I think I just opened four lines. It's like, how long have I been hosting this program?
It's the pressure.
When the College of Collectible Knowledge is here, the phones go nuts and there is pressure. John and Webster and Fred, please call back. Go ahead, John and Webster.
Hi, Evan. I have a swan-shaped solid sterling silver British toast rack. I'm wondering if it's worth anything more than the weight or whether it's a collector's item.
Does it have a maker's mark on it anywhere?
Let me look. I knew you were going to ask.
Any hallmarks or a name?
It has the Queen's shield on it at the bottom and WX and a check mark.
No, you said it is sterling?
Yes.
It's marked sterling.
How would I know?
It would say sterling or 925, but it
would
English.
Or it would have a hallmark.
Yeah, English.
It doesn't have that, but I do know it's sterling.
How do you know that?
My mother told me, but that doesn't. Oh,
okay, that doesn't.
Does it.
That doesn't constitute a valid appraisal.
Bring along on some valuation.
John, you were not listening to the part about provenance earlier.
No, I'm not. I didn't.
There was a good story about a client that came in and they had some napkin rings they insisted that these came over on, I think, the Santa Maria or something.
No, the Mayflower.
Yeah,
and they didn't start making napkin
rings.
It's
been worn on the bottom quite a bit.
They didn't make napkin rings until 1890.
Not electroplated ones, anyway.
So, at any rate, if a lot of the teapots could be sterling, but they also could be quadruplated. So you'd have to look and see if there's a hallmark. If you see a lion, a passant lion, then it's silver sterling.
It's easy enough to just take it to a coin shop or a jeweler's and say, can you test this?
Because my mom brought it over here when she came here in the 60s.
How big is this actually?
It weighs about 9 ounces. It has space for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 slices of toast. And it's shaped like a swan, and then it's cut out so that
the toast
can fit in.
Yeah.
Usually sterling has a different characteristic than electroplate. You can usually tell just by looking at it due to the type of erosion or wear that may exist on a surface. It's the same kind of thing with gold-filled or gold-plated. So that would be the first determination. Then if the hallmarks register, English silver typically, especially 19th century or even 18th century silver, has hallmarks as opposed to sterling or 925 designation. So it's kind of an esoteric issue because it's all about who made it, and you have to research the symbol. So that would be the first place to start.
Yeah, all I can make out is the Royal Coat of Arms.
Sure, and that may be a valid trademark for a specific type of silver manufacturer. So the thing to do is go on the internet if you have that access, and then there's certain sites that you can, you know, as a person, you know, regular public can go into and start looking at those types of trademarks.
Yeah, I'll have someone.
Yeah, that would be the thing to do.
I'm a Luddite.
Of course.
All right, thank you very much.
Well, thank you, John. Thanks for the phone call. We've got Fred back in Rochester. Go ahead, Fred.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead, sir.
I have an engraving of a painting that was of the scene of historic New York City from Governor's Island. The view is, so it dates from, doesn't have a date on it, but the subject is Colonial New York, and it's a view from Governor's Island toward Lower Manhattan. It's a color engraving of a painting by W.G. Wall, and it's titled New York from Governor's Island. It's about 28 by 24 inches.
Is there a manufacturer's name on it?
Well, I don't know if this is... it says Haggard and Company,
okay.
H-A-G-G-A-R-D. And just below that is where it says painted by W.G. Wall. And then also on the other side it says engraved by I. Hill.
Okay.
So does it look like it's a hand-colored engraving? Or does it look like the color is printed on the paper?
I wouldn't be able to answer that for you. I wish my wife were here. She might know the difference. But it looks very delicate. Whether it's an engraving,
so I don't
know.
Is there any staining or foxing to the image?
Of a painting. It's not an original
painting. How's the condition on the piece? Is there any foxing? Is there any deterioration?
No, it's in quite good shape. The frame itself is a little beaten up.
Yeah, sure. Usually print collectors are very specific about the condition. If there's a stain, if there's any type of foxing, it can basically kill the value. Yeah. I don't know if you're finding any.
Well, the engravings, unless they're very early or of a very famous artist, don't bring a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
Your birds or your painting of, not the painting, but the engraving that you're mentioning, doesn't do that well. I mean, you're talking probably somewhere between $75 to $125.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them have foxing on them, which just means that the acid is leaching through onto the paper. I don't think it would be worth having it restored if it does, but there's quite a few around, and
they pretty much fall in the decorative.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
very
pleasant to look at. People do buy them to decorate their homes.
Or bed and breakfasts.
Bed and breakfast.
Right. Not in really a collectible market.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Fred, in Rochester. This is Mary next up. Go ahead, Mary.
Hi. I was wondering if you could help me try to decipher if there's any value to a sword we found in a city home. I tried to go online. It was buried in the rafters, but I don't know how to narrow my search.
Okay.
It's got a teak cover, brass handle.
Okay.
Does it look Asian Oriental at all?
It's in it has on the blade, it has like a lot of etching that's not like Japanese or Asian, but almost looks Arabic.
How long is it?
About 22 inches, not including the handle.
And is it curved?
And it's slight curved.
It's Middle Eastern.
Is the blade wider at the tip?
At the tip, it's narrower.
Yeah. It's narrower. Okay.
Yeah.
It depends on how old it is. If it's 18th century, it's very valuable. And if it's 20th century export item for the tourist market, it's maybe a couple hundred dollars.
Yeah. Okay.
It just depends on how old it is. It really determines the value.
If you want to send a picture of it to Evan.
Yeah.
You can send it to me, edawson@wxxi.org, or the Wanderman email, info@...
jackwanderman.com,
at jackwanderman.com,
or show up at our appraisal event next
week. You can bring
it
next Saturday.
Okay.
But, Mary, is this helping you At least get a handle on it?
Yeah, it was in a house that we've had it for at least over 30 years.
Okay.
And it was stuck in the rafter.
Do you use the image search on Google?
I haven't done, I didn't know how to narrow it down. You mean take a picture and then do an image search?
No, on your Google page, on the home page, there's a little line of words up on the top edge, and one of them is images or image. If you click on that and write in your search line, just put in Middle Eastern sword or something very vague like that, but what you get is only pictures.
Right, so you can easily compare.
Yeah.
It's certainly Middle Eastern. The hard part, the thing from Google Images search, and we have a lot of clients that take that as an initial means, is to actually determine the age. And unless you've actually gone through, like, the Metz collection of armor and really spent time studying the oxidation of steel, iron, and craftsmanship, it's really hard to tell from an image how old it is, unless you've seen a lot of pieces.
But at least you can...
Pick out a name, so you
have a further reference frame.
And if you don't have any luck there, just do swords. Just do swords and narrow it down.
Yeah, good luck.
Mary, good luck. Let's get through as many calls as we can, and let's keep it moving here. So next up, Richard in Rochester. Go ahead, Richard.
Hi, folks. I have a statue which is about 12 inches tall. It appears to be Asian. It looks like jade, and on the bottom of it looks like an old auction tag with an old-fashioned typewriter, and there's a number on it, and it says elder and child. And
that was an auction house, it was an auction house. What's the figure of?
The description on the tag says elder and child, and it looks like an Asian man or something with a staff.
A lot of the times... The depiction of children in Asian art is of Kuan Yin, who is a protector of children. Mm-hmm. And the material is, you said, jade?
Well, on the bottom, it looks like jade up to the eye, but on the bottom it says nephrite.
Is the material really shiny, or is jade eye tends to be shinier than the different types of
it's
material.
It's a very smooth surface. It's like a spinachy color green, or a darker green.
Or it could be serpentine. It's hard to say without actually seeing it.
Nephrite is really another name for jade.
Uh-huh.
So I'd have to see it. How tall is it?
It's about 12 inches tall, I would
say. It's probably Kuan Yin, or there's another deity called Shou Lao, who is sometimes depicted with a peach, which is longevity, but I would tend to think Kuan Yin is the best thing to do would be send us a picture. Send it to Jack Wanderman.
info@jackwanderman.com. Usually the figures tend to be 20th century. More of the earlier pieces tend to be more cups and vases and things like that. So it sounds like it's probably some type of Chinese hard stone, and it's probably somewhere early 20th century.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry about that, Richard, but there you go. I hope we got enough for you there.
No, we'll be able to tell you what it is when we see the picture.
You got it. All right, Gail, Naples. Go ahead, Gail.
Oh, hi. I was wondering if there would be any value to a Christmas card received from the Clinton administration from the White House that looks like it might have their individual signatures on it, but I can't be sure.
They're all supposed to look like they've got the individual signatures. Any value?
Yes.
Any value?
Yes.
Yes?
If Hillary wins more.
That's right. Hold on to it.
But realistically, what kind of value could there be?
Anywhere between 100 and more. That's the type of market where there's no real legitimate comps because it's one-off. It's presidential memorabilia. It depends on if she'd be – like the Prince album we were talking about today. Suddenly the Prince albums are worth more because he just passed away. It just depends on what ends up happening. It could shoot up. Suddenly somebody's willing to pay $500 for it just because Hillary wins. It depends on what happens.
But the normal cards that are from the White House and the Clinton administration, anywhere from $20 to $45.
They've actually signed it. Just depends.
It's a real signature.
It depends. I doubt the Clintons would have taken the time to send.
Depends on who they're sending it
to. Right. Well, that's true.
Yeah, that's true.
If you have an envelope that's handwritten to go with it, that could help identify
that could
it.
Help.
Yeah. But where it was postmarked, you know, all of that stuff makes a difference in pricing. And I think Nick's, you know, there's a possibility that you're in the $200 range.
All right, against my better judgment, I want to try to sneak one more in.
Okay.
Lucy in Pittsford. Go ahead, Lucy.
Hi, I found in my attic an old toy called Tinker Pins, registered with the U.S. Patent Office June 20th, 1916. It's never been used. It's still in its original container with the instructions.
Is it a cylinder with, like, pickup sticks in it, that type of thing?
No. It's something you build and you play with the pins off to the side here.
And it says Tinker on the beginning?
Tinker Pins.
Yeah.
So it's made. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah.
It was made in Evanston, Illinois, made in the shops of the Toy Tinkers, Evanston, Illinois.
Yeah.
No big deal. You're talking $20, $30.
Yeah, maybe a little more depending on the graphics on the container. But it's the Tinker Toy Company line, or that same related to the regular Tinker Toys.
It is.
Which did building toys.
So. All right, Lucy, hope that helps. There's the picture of the sword there. There you go. There you are.
You.
So we're closing the hour just verifying the sword, 22-inch sword that was described by one of our listeners.
Looks like a German hunting sword. With a stag handle.
No.
That's all right. They'll get back to you.
Oh, are you disagreeing? Do we have some disagreement here?
We do. We have a difference
Nick?
Of opinion.
It's stag.
It's hard to tell from the photo. It's slightly shaken, not stirred.
Well, the best way, come see us, because we're out of time for the College of Collectible Knowledge. We might have set a record with your phone calls this hour, and if we didn't get through your call, and there's a few who couldn't get through, you've got a chance to get a ticket, $30 a piece, to our studio and the 4th annual WXXI Antiques Appraisal Fair. That is next Saturday, 8 days from now, May 7th, 10 to 3 at the WXXI studio. You can bring your items down there. You can get tickets right now at WXXI.org/events, or you can call 258-0200.
As always, it's been fun, Evan.
Oh,
yes,
my gosh.
You,
always
Evan.
So much fun. Yep. Jack, Nick, Yvonne, thank you so much. I know our listeners are grateful.
Thanks to everybody for listening. We appreciate it. We look forward to seeing you next week.
Yep,
you
come
got
on
it.
Down.
We'll see you there. John Andrus, our engineer. Thank you, sir. Megan Max, the producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a great day. Have a great weekend. We'll talk with you Monday.